behind the bench, on the floor, inside the locker room, and in the stands. We're everywhere.
Never back off.
With everything you need to know about the association, this is Hoops on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome to Hoops on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you from Orlando, Florida on American Thanksgiving. To those of you listening stateside, for those of you that are American in Canada, celebrating both, wherever you may be, happy Thanksgiving. Always one of my favorite days on the calendar. I don't know about you, Jonesy, but to divert from basketball for 1 second here, I don't get on too much of a soapbox here, but there's no denying that most holidays are very, very commercial. Thanksgiving doesn't seem to be as commercial. And for whatever reason, we don't seem to put as much stock or emphasis on it in Canada as the folks stateside do. I mean, in the U.S., it sure seems like being home for Thanksgiving, being in touch with family, being around family and friends means even more at Thanksgiving than arguably it does at Christmas. To me, that means that much more, that it's really just about coming together, having some food, drinking some wine, watching some football, and just kind of being around those you love.
Eric, you're right. And I think the biggest thing about the Thanksgiving holiday in the U.S. is, and I don't want people to take this the wrong way, it's non-denominational. It's not like if you're of a certain faith or religious sect or cultural background, the holiday doesn't hold more for you than it does for other people. And as you said, it really is about family.
Yeah.
And it's about your family. It's about your family being with other families. It's about groups of families together, the same way I guess the idea of Thanksgiving first started. So, I mean, it's a huge holiday in the U.S. And then, you know, the traditions, like, you know, we were sitting on the plane, and our plane has, you know, they let you watch TV on the plane. And I was watching a football game. Yeah. I was also flipping back and forth between the championship college basketball game with North Carolina and Michigan. And,
yeah, go blue.
Yeah, but you know, it's one of those holidays that it just seems to, and you make a great point about it not being as commercialized as some of the other ones. And it's great. And it lasts a while too. Like, it's not just the one day. The Americans, they make a time out of it. It's, you know, it starts on Thursday and it doesn't end till like Monday or Tuesday.
Yeah, I mean, it becomes commercial immediately on Friday when it becomes Black Friday, and that's really not anything tied to Thanksgiving. That's more like, all right, the sales have hit, it's time to start Christmas shopping. Now you got a month to go, and I can't believe we're only a month away from Christmas Day. But anyways, we'll digress from that. We, earlier this evening, prior to doing the show right now, had a chance to, you know, granted, obviously not with family, but we're in Orlando here. We were with our travel family, our friends, our traveling party, myself and Jonesy and Matt Devlin, Leo Routen, Sherm Hamilton, all our guys behind the scenes, the traveling crew, Chris Phillips, Dan Gladman, Dave Leader, Johnny Russin, Travis Stone, Jeff Landicho, Jeff Rocky, Matt Tierney, all the guys. We just had a chance to sit at a table and break bread, and now we're bringing you the show. So that was, 3 minutes and 10 seconds diverting to start the show on Thanksgiving. Let's talk some hoops, and I want to look past the New York Knicks on Wednesday night for a minute. We will talk Knicks ball. We will talk RJ Barrett and Team Canada, but let's go back earlier in the week, Jonesy, when the Raptors started that little mini homestand of a couple of games. Three more, by the way, coming up at home after the game against the Magic on Friday night. The Raptors will play host to Utah, Miami, and Houston. So next week, an extremely difficult week. At least it's on the home floor. The home floor has been ridiculously good to the Raptors thus far. Undefeated at home this season. Best start in franchise history at 8-0. And one of those eight included a O as well. The O in the scoring column, excuse me, the donut for Joel Embiid this past Monday.
It did. And, when we left the arena, I threw the tweet out because it had been given to me by their fine TV play-by-play announcer, Mark Zumov. The first time as a collegiate player or a professional player that Joel Embiid did not score a point. And it was kind of crazy to see it. And you and I were talking about it, like the fact that the game was close, and you kept saying on the broadcast, I don't like the fact that the game is this close and Joel Embiid hasn't scored, or the Raptors are up, they're only up four and Joel Embiid hasn't scored. And you, like everybody else, kept waiting for this guy to put a couple buckets together. He can be an unstoppably dominant player when he chooses to be, and it just never materialized. So give the Raptors credit, and you know, we should probably look at a little bit of the recent history with that. The fact that LeBron James, Kawhi Leonard, Damian Lillard had all been held in check. You know, poor, he got hurt the last time the Raptors played the Magic, but poor Nick Vucevic is seeing double teams coming at him in his sleep, and you know, he turned an ankle. But this is nothing new for the Raptors in their defensive scheme. So good on Toronto. And boy, did Joel Embiid, a guy that loves to trash talk on Twitter and Instagram, boy, did he take it on the chin. But to me, it speaks more to the Raptors and the residue of a championship team, understanding what they have to do, when they have to do, plugging people in. Nick Nurse, you and I were there Wednesday when he was talking about...
At practice on Tuesday.
At practice, yeah. Right. He was talking about, we don't just hope guys understand our system. We show them on video. We tell them, and this, to me, this is great as an educator. It addresses a different learning style. You tell them, it's auditory. You show them, it's visual. And you get out on the floor and you do it, and that's, you know, kinesthetic. Like you hit and check every box.
Right.
And what they're showing them is the stuff from the championship. Like, okay, you're playing this position that Danny Green was, or you're do this, what Kawhi Leonard did to best of your ability. And and a guy like Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, who hasn't played very much, all of a sudden is able to jump in with the defensive mindset and carry it out. Nick talked about Marc Gasol. He's got the ability. He's got the IQ. He puts in the effort, you know, and he has the understanding. And all of a sudden, his defense, and you and I were laughing about this, I'm actually going to get our engineer Vic to count this the next time we do a game together, how many times Marc Gasol actually leaves the floor, because he's killing everybody, playing like the old man at the YMCA. Right. He's just so smart, but he has enough ability. When you think about it, Eric, there's three stages of a player. The young player that comes in, like the young Kobe, that's all jump and jam and all athleticism. Then there's that middle phase when you've been in the league 4 or 5 years, that you've got that athleticism, but you now understand from a mental standpoint the game. And then you're at the Marc Gasol stage now, where your physical tools are not what they used to be, but you understand the game so much, you can get away with not being able to jump and jam like you were, you know, in your early 20s. And that's where Mark is. And I think he's doing a great job of leading the defense like that.
You know, I can't remember, Jonesy, if we talked about this on last week's show or if it was something you and I just discussed during one of the broadcasts. So I apologize, folks, if I'm sounding somewhat repetitive. And I'll give Jonesy the credit that he, I believe, was the first to bring it up when we did speak about it. But everything you just said about the Raptors plugging in the pieces and playing a certain style, it's because they now have established, you know, and whether they began to establish it under Dwayne Casey with Pound the Rock, whether it was established more so last year under Nick Nurse, and then, you know, with the additions that the Raptors made of a former, you know, first team defensive guy in Danny Green, let alone in Kawhi Leonard and et cetera, whatever it is, whenever it started, fact is there is a way that the Toronto Raptors play basketball. There is a style in which they play. There is a culture in which they play on the team and within the organization. And for decades, we would talk about the San Antonio Spurs, the San Antonio way, and pick your organization, the top, the best of the best. We would say that's how they play. That's the style. You come in, you're expected to play the way Popovich wants, and he's not going to adapt to you. You're going to adapt to him. And I think that's where we're at now with the Toronto Raptors, where this is how the Raptors play basketball. This is the way that they preach within the organization. And if you're going to be here, you're going to get in line or you're not going to play. And I think there's no two finer examples of that than Stanley Johnson and Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, who came to this team, as we all assumed, defensive-minded guys that are going to fit perfectly with the Raptors. And then what happened? They weren't bringing it, not to the point or not to the extent that Nick Nurse needed them to or wanted them to. And Stanley Johnson didn't really see a whole lot of burn before, unfortunately, getting hurt. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson finally got a chance, and now, given that opportunity, maybe it was the wake-up call thinking, all right, I know how I got to play now. I know what I wasn't doing before and what I need to do now. And what's he doing? He's getting more and more playing time and obviously making massive contributions now, too.
Erica, yeah, and I remember we did talk about it, and I call it the culture, like that that nebulous word that we can't define, culture. What is it? Well, I mean, in Toronto right now, the same way it was, as you mentioned, in San Antonio, the same way with Pat Riley in Miami or wherever, it's It's a way of doing things with an expectation attached to it. And that's what Toronto has right now. And, you know, Nick Nurse has got to be in the running, early running for coach of the year. And I think the Raptors are surprising people. You know, as we record this, they sit tied for second in the East, a game behind Milwaukee. They're third because of the loss to Boston. But even that loss, I mean, I think of their four losses. The loss to Boston, Boston had 102 field goal attempts because Toronto couldn't rebound. They still hold those Celtics under 40%, and they lose that game. You know, the Milwaukee game, they get down like, it would have been their largest comeback. They were down 28, I believe, and had it to two or had it to four with the ball, ready to cut it to two, and there's a block and things turn around. Like, it's just so many of the losses you can think of, you know, they were right in them.
Oh, the Clipper game, they had a lead in the fourth quarter. It came down the last 4 or 5 minutes.
4 for 24 in the fourth quarter. Like, those are the things that, are, you know, are keeping them from you know, being 15-1, 14-1.
Well, even the Dallas loss, they held Luka Doncic to one field goal through quarters 2, 3, and 4. But he went off in the first quarter, and Porzingis came alive in the second half.
So, you know, to our point, there is the culture in Toronto, a way of doing things with an expectation attached to it. So, you know, let's give Toronto credit, what they built. And it wasn't, it's like turning an ocean liner. It wasn't built overnight. It's taken a while to get here, but now that they have it, it's time to hang on to it.
All right, we started this conversation talking about the donut that Joel Embiid put up against the Raptors earlier in the week. Philadelphia expected to be one of the top teams in the East, battling with Milwaukee, with Toronto, with Boston. Many people, even the prognosticators, Vegas, still expecting Philadelphia to be the top team in the Atlantic Division for whatever the divisions are worth these days. But you had a chance to dig a little bit deeper on Philly with former NBA player and Sixers broadcaster Ala Abdelnaby.
Yeah, I had a chance to chat with Ala, who, you know, we talked a lot about the Game 7 loss. Everybody saw Embiid's reaction and what did it do to them and how did it kind of prep them coming into this year.
All right, Jonesy with Ala Abdelnaby.
Ala, always great to see you. Man, let's start right in Philadelphia with the Sixers. What do you think, and we know this, as athletes, you're always motivated by the failure. You never want that to happen again. What do you think, let's talk about the guys on the floor first, never mind the front office, but guys like Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons. What do you think those guys took from a very tight Game 7 loss to Toronto?
Oh, if nothing else, fuel. I think it's something that sustains you on days when you may be less motivated.
Right.
It's a stark reminder of how short you came up and what the work that you evidently still have left to do. So I think, you know, if you're honest with yourself and you remember pain can be a great motivator, like you said at the top of the question. The avoidance of future pain.
Adversity's a good teacher.
Yeah, is a heck of a motivator. So I would imagine, not that the 76ers have this day on the calendar, so to speak, because that was a different scenario and a different playoff round. This is a regular season game. But that being said, I think they realize that they haven't won a regular season game here in a while and want to reverse that trend. And then to have things start going in your favor, you know, in this matchup.
Have you heard, or maybe with your observation, seen anything from anybody that kind of relates it back to Game 7? You know, we talked about the failures. I mean, like you said, guys driven during the summer, obviously. You know, we saw the videos of Ben working on the jump shot. I mean, is there anything that you've noticed outwardly, Ala?
It hasn't manifested itself into anything that you can recognize.
Right, okay.
But again, that fire, you know, I'm sure burns inside of each and every one of them. And I don't know if they want us to even see that kind of thing. You know, the only redemption they're going to get is to go further past. I don't even think it's about beating the Toronto Raptors anymore. I think it's just about getting closer to where they want to ultimately go as a unit. And it just happened to be that the Raptors were in the way and wound up winning it, too, to their credit.
The new additions. I really like Josh Richardson. That was one that, I mean, everybody talked about Al Horford, and Al's a terrific player, and he's a great vet, but the Josh Richardson one, those are the
Those are the accessories, you know, like the fancy rims on your car, right? People will look and go, wow, nice rims, you know, like, I like that pickup.
There's flash to it.
Yeah.
But there's also some substance to it. I mean, because he's got both ends of the floor down. He embraces the defense. He embraces what he's now been asked to do offensively, which is to play a little bit of the point, which he never did in Miami. And you can see, and I even talked to Brett Brown about this at the beginning, there was a little hesitation from Josh offensively and defensively at the beginning because I don't think he knew what was expected of him.
Right, right.
As the season has progressed, I'm sure he's in Brett Brown's ear. Brett Brown is in his ear. I think his roles become clear. You've seen him start to take off, man. He's had some crazy games the last three games from OKC, maybe even Orlando, too, before that, where he's been able to put a string of games together that indicative of what we expected.
Okay, so we talked about guys on the floor, and the Josh Richardson, Al Horford moves were obviously front office moves in motivation for what happened, or trying, as you say, to get closer to the goal. What do you think is left? I mean, what do you – everybody can always use something. Sure. What do you think this team could use?
I think this team would always, like any other team in the world, shooting makes up for a multitude of sins.
Yes.
And not that the 76ers have a lot to hide, but you want to hide the ones you have. And shooting is always an added plus. I think what the 76ers are tilting and leaning towards now is the defensive end of the floor,
because
your defense can always travel with you, or you can always pack it in your bag, so to speak. But you're going to still need some shooting.
Yeah.
So I think if the 76ers had, you know, their druthers, they would ask for maybe a shooter or two.
Toronto, I guess it can be best summed up about 2 weeks ago before he got injured. Somebody from the national media at practice said to Serge Ibaka, well, Serge, are you kind of, you know, worried that nobody's picked you? He said, well, nobody picked us last year. And he started to break out in a big belly laugh.
Sure.
This team still has a chip on its shoulder. What do you see from Toronto, Ala, with both Kawhi Leonard and Danny Green gone?
I talked to Nick Nurse in the preseason about this year's squad. And what is evident to me, and after talking to him, was that Masai Ujiri put together probably the most well-rounded unit to build around one guy. It wasn't like it was built around three stars or two stars like you see other teams have. You really only had Kawhi and then the gang.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
to be well-balanced and to only lose two players, really, and one main guy in Kawhi, that leaves the multitude of guys still very, very capable in the roles that they've already occupied. Yeah. So now I think the position Nick said was, I'm asking each one of them to grow a little.
Yes.
And if you can just get growth from each guy, whether it's Fred, whether it's, you know, Pascal, whether it's Obi, it's any of those guys can flourish or all.
Yeah.
I think that you can never make up for a Kawhi, but I think you can give yourself a being the best team this unit can be.
With Ala Abdelnaby, one of the fine people around the league, and he happens also to be a broadcaster for the 76ers. Ala, let's look at the rest of the East, because everybody wants to talk about how the epicenter is L.A. with LeBron and Anthony Davis on one team and Kawhi and Paul George on the other team. But as we saw last year, all it takes is one team, right? All it takes is one team. How wide open do you really see the East this year? I mean, there's like right now as we're doing this interview, there's like five teams that you can throw a blanket over, and a team like Indiana's coming on too.
Yeah, and I don't know if Miami was on your list, but I think they should be, because coming into this season, I don't think we expected much out of Miami. I think Jimmy Butler left here to take the money to go relax on South Beach, but it turns out he's got a bunch of players around him, and they're better than I think we all expected. So I think there's a bunch of guys and a bunch of teams out there, but I don't know if many of them are built to win a championship.
Right.
I think there's a lot of contenders out there. I think there's a lot of good teams out there. But I only see maybe three when I look at Philadelphia, Milwaukee, and maybe Boston.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I want to give Boston a chance with Kyrie gone to maybe play like they did 2 years ago without Kyrie in the playoffs. They had a great season there. So maybe they can bring that back up again. But I still think I have to lean towards the 76ers only, I shouldn't say only, mainly because of your D.
Right.
Because
of
the defense.
Is there anybody that's going to challenge those two out west? Is it going to be? Are we going to see a conference final where nobody has to travel?
Listen, I'm not convinced. Wouldn't that be something? The Staples Center be the center of the world, or the Western Conference at least. I'm not convinced about Houston yet. I'm worried that Denver's kind of started slow, but they'll come around too. They've got a lot of talent. I think one more year under Mike Malone, I think, suits them well.
Yeah.
So you're going to keep an eye on Houston too. Denver. I'm not convinced about Houston though, so they'll contend, but I think it's the Clippers to lose. Although the Lakers are making me change my mind day in and day out.
LeBron looks motivated, doesn't he?
I didn't think they had enough, but I was basing that on how I saw LeBron play last year.
Yeah.
I did not anticipate LeBron playing like he's playing. That changes my equation considerably, and now all of a sudden the Lakers have to be in contention.
One of those things where a guy takes motivation. He's taken this washed-up thing too far in my estimation, but players
whatever it takes.
Whatever it takes. Paul, I want to talk to you about one of the new rule changes here, the coach's challenge.
Mm.
Your thoughts on it? Do you think it'll survive the year?
It's interesting because I have friends of mine who are officials, and I wanted to know how it was being used in the preseason.
Yeah.
So I made a call to Sea Caucus. I live very close to it, and I asked a couple of my buddies. And they came back with interesting numbers. 53% of the preseason challenges used by coaches weren't in the fourth quarter. So it was curious to me was, were they just taking it out for a spin to see how it worked? Or, because to me, I anticipated it being used in the fourth quarter predominantly.
Yeah.
To find out that more than half was the other three quarters, that caught me a little bit off guard.
Yeah.
And I'm curious to see how it's being utilized in the season.
My feeling is, unless it's one of my star players getting his fourth foul in the second, in the third quarter
that's
or third,
worth it.
That's worth it.
Right.
But a lot of guys are going to hold on to it, and I just wonder about what percentage. Right now, it's around 35-36% being overturned, but what's being overturned?
Right.
Fouls.
Right. Right.
Goaltends, out of bounds.
What we've seen sometimes is we've seen a review and a foul be given to a different player in their review. So sometimes if you're the coach, you may want to just keep things as they are because sometimes the unintended consequence is what you're faced to deal with.
Ala, always great to talk with you. We will be in Philadelphia in a very short time period.
Please come and say hello.
We will.
You're
we will.
Welcome.
That was Jonesy in conversation with former NBA player, Sixers broadcaster, Ala Abdelnaby. When we come back, we'll keep it in the Atlantic, and we'll talk about the struggling New York Knicks and, well, Canadian phenom, R.J. Barrett. It's all on tap next on Hoops on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Hoops on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome back to Hoops on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you from Orlando, Florida on U.S. Thanksgiving Day. Jonesy, Wednesday night we saw the New York Knicks come to town, and it's been a struggle to say the least for David Fizdale and the New York Knicks this year. Bottom of the Eastern Conference. It looks like it's going to be a grind yet again for the Knicks, but certainly one bright light, if not a couple, but definitely one bright light in Canadian R.J. Barrett, who, you know, he had a rough outing too in terms of his percentage, but kept grinding, put some numbers up on the board, and just kind of enjoyed the moment of finally playing his first game in his hometown.
He did, Eric, and look, the good thing for R.J. Barrett is he's going to get, you know, Nick Nurse talked about this, he's going to get a lot of reps playing against high-level competition. And right now, there aren't a lot of expectations in New York. So I think it really provides a forum for growth for young Mr. Barrett.
All right, we'll talk more about Barrett after the interview. I want to give you a chance to listen in right now as I went one-on-one with the radio voice of the New York Knicks. For more on Barrett and the Knicks overall, here is Ed Cohen. Ed, when you and I ran into each other on Wednesday morning prior to the Knicks shoot-around, kind of chatting a little bit off air, saying, it's been a struggle, there's no denying, for New York to start the year. But I don't know, am I wrong to say that there are still some positive signs and reason to be optimistic about some of what we've seen in spite of the record? There are building blocks in place that make you think
things could be kind of finally starting to turn the right way?
Well, Eric, I think number one, the reason I saw you that early on a Wednesday morning is because of one of those building blocks. And yes, you know, RJ Barrett, when you pick someone third overall, you want to see the development, you want to see the instinct taking the floor, even as a rookie. And I think that's been the brightest spot. Both ends of the floor, this young man who's just 19 years old has found ways to score, get to the rim, play through contact. He's adjusted his game. And even when he has an off night, he does the little things. You just feel like he's going to stick. And that's been a huge bright spot. And then I think collectively, you know, we're talking here in Toronto, and the Knicks away from Madison Square Garden. Now, the record might not say it, but they've been in just about every game on the road. Only game so far this season on the road where they've really struggled was early November in Detroit. They've had fourth quarter leads in seven of their first eight road games. That's impressive. So I think if they could just play that way at the start of games, especially at home, that'll really help them going forward.
I was talking to somebody after the that New York shoot-around on Wednesday morning, and they asked me, well, what did Coach Fizdale have to say about RJ? And I said, well, listen, he said he liked his IQ, he liked his work ethic, the fact that he's a sponge for the game, et cetera. And the guy said to me, he's like, well, what else is a coach going to say? But I don't know, call me naive. I took it for what it was worth. I felt like he truly meant it. This wasn't just a coach kind of blowing smoke of the third overall pick. And I know RJ a little bit. I've seen him around the building enough for the, you know, almost his whole life and hanging around his dad. He does seem like, I don't know if he's a different breed, but he's the type of breed that you definitely want in not only a top pick, but in wherever you select. That's the kind of player that a lot of teams would want.
Take David Fizdale at his word, because I think the word that I associate already with RJ Barrett, and it's only been a couple of months, he's a pro. He's a pro in every sense. The work he puts in, Eric, the way he carries himself on the floor, the way he is around not just his teammates, coaches, but other people around the franchise, fans, young fans, he gets it. And a lot of rookies do. Some might be more soft-spoken at that age than others, but you just get the sense that he understands what goes into the job of being the face of a franchise. And now there's some other veteran players on this Knicks team right now, but ultimately, even with some veterans, when you draft someone third overall who play with Zion Williamson, he's stepping into major expectations, and he's just handled them so well. And then you think, too, you know, he didn't have a great start to summer league. Yeah. He had a great finish, but if things carried out the way they did over those first two or so games, that would have been the headline all summer, going into training camp. And I think he has handled adversity when it's come in bursts really well. You know, when he's had a bad game, he's answered the questions, he's moved on, and you just don't feel like the world is crashing above him. And David Fizdale was right. You know, those are cliches. I think they apply in earnest to RJ Barrett.
You mentioned some of the veterans in New York. Is there one guy, or is it kind of a collective thing in terms of anybody that sort of either reached out to RJ or that RJ has taken to and sort of kind of fallen under the wing or you know, maybe cozied up to a little bit more than others?
I don't know if it's one particular guy, but I can say among the guys they brought in, and even a guy like Julius Randle feels like a veteran.
Okay.
Year
yep.
number six,
yep.
He's had success individually in other places. But I think the two guys, if I had to pinpoint the veterans who've really lent something to the young guys on the Knicks roster, Taj Gibson, number one, and he's been really good for Mitchell Robinson, kind of like DeAndre Jordan was last year. And the other is Marcus Morris. Now, there are times where you worry it at moments in games. You don't want him to get that second technical. He's an emotional guy, but I think internally he keeps players accountable, and the coaches have appreciated that. And I think the younger guys, you can learn something from a tough-nosed guy from Philadelphia who lives it, breathes it, and wants to win badly.
Right.
And I think coming from Boston and his prior stops, I think that's been a really good thing for some of the younger guys.
Oh, I often say you can't have all choir boys, right? You want a little bit of sandpaper on your team, no matter you know what that player is, as long as it's in the right manner, the right attitude. But you want a guy with a little bit of edge.
What do they say? Volume breeds confidence.
Yeah.
Right? You need a little volume in the room. Sometimes you need a little volume on the court, and he definitely brings it. You know, he's North Philadelphia, great run at Kansas, gritty Boston teams last 2 years. Yeah, I think he's someone who, number one, statistically, is having a great year.
Yep.
And obviously his role has increased since, you know, he was with a Boston team that had so many guys in the rotation who were effective. But yeah, I think he keeps everybody on edge in a positive way.
Well, I mean, obviously folks in Toronto know North Philly with Kyle Lowry and the edge and the attitude that he can bring, let alone then the leadership skills too, especially in the championship run last year. I want to stay on RJ for a second and just talk more off the court. For a 19-year-old in New York City, I mean, hey, he grew up in Toronto in the GTA, the New York of Canada in a sense, and he's been under the spotlight for quite a while and playing with Duke and everything. But is it different, do you think, for him? Is he handling that component well? You mentioned, you know, the kids, but whether it be the media, whether it be the celebrity status, whether it be just the city itself, it's things are different in New York.
He had the right pedigree, 100%, Eric. Number one, his mom being from Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Both parents going to St. John's. His dad with the national team and the position he's risen to in basketball in this country, I think went down to RJ. I think just naturally leaving Canada to go play in the U.S., a move that he has said he had to take. Like, it was so hard leaving home for him emotionally, and there were a lot of sleepless nights when he first went to Montford, but he has said he had to leave. He begged his parents to leave because he knew the only way he could take that next step as a basketball player was to do it. I think that's really important. And then, you know, even one-year Duke, and let's be honest, one-and-done players, I mean, how much are they really on campus? Five, six months? Because once the season's over, they know they're turning pro, you know, they're out the door. But even in those 5 or 6 months, I mean, he was playing in a crazy kind of way on the most watched team in the United States last year with Duke. That's how many eyeballs were on Zion Williamson, RJ Barrett, and the Blue Devils. So I think all of that helped him by the time he got to the New York stage. And the coolest thing was, once the Knicks were picking third in the lottery, unless John Morant was slipping, people knew that was likely the pick. Yep. And he wanted it so bad. You know, most guys, it's how will you handle New York? He embraced it, which I thought was really cool to see. And New Yorkers will never forget that kind of attitude.
That was the radio play-by-play voice of the New York Knicks, Ed Cohen-Jonesy. Let's put the Knicks aside for a second, but stay on RJ. He the latest in line of a number of players that have come out over the last 48, 72 hours that have committed to playing for Canada in Victoria in June in the last-ditch Olympic qualifier as Canada tries to punch their ticket to the Olympics. And it certainly does set Canada up for their best showing in terms of those showing up. But now it's about showing up in terms of the performance and actually getting it done on the court.
Yeah, it is. And a lot of things are falling into place for Team Canada, where the tournament's taking place, the timing, all of those things. And just you want the guys to come out. It's great that they've got commitments from Barrett and Jamal Murray and Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. And look, we've talked about this. At what point do you have enough NBA players that you are actually cutting NBA players from your national team? We've seen that already, and I think they're going to have that somewhat, you know, same sort of decision this June if everybody shows up. But it's about putting the best team on the court and a chance to, you know, make it to the Olympics.
All right, when we come back, we'll continue with more conversations looking around the league as we will shift our attention, well, to another team in the East that's kind of struggling, but it seems like perhaps their future is that much brighter than what we're seeing from the Knicks. We'll talk Atlanta Hawks and more when we continue on Hoops from Orlando on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake Doctor's Orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Welcome back to Hoops on Sportsnet 590 Fan. Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you from Orlando, Florida, as we continue to our conversations about the National Basketball Association, as we do every single week right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, the longest running basketball show in the city, I believe even in the country. So props to us, Jonesy, for 20 plus years bringing it to you folks. Hopefully you enjoy it. And if you're listening on the podcast as well, download anytime at sportsnet.ca/590. All right. You had a chance to talk to Mike Glenn, another former NBA player, and I said going into the commercial in our last segment, you know, the Hawks have struggled, much like the Knicks, but it seems like the future is that much brighter, or there's more reason to believe what's happening in Atlanta is at least on the upward swing.
Yeah, it is with Trae Young, and unfortunately John Collins is out. But they draft some guys that can help them out, and that's part of it, drafting, and then you get some veterans like a Vince Carter who told us he's. You know, he wants to play, but he can also be a voice for these young guys. And talk to former NBA player, one of their studio analysts, Mike Glenn, a former Atlanta Hawk himself. And interesting take about the Hawks and everything else going on around the league.
All right, here's Jonesy with Mike Glenn.
Mike, always good to see you, and we love our trips to Atlanta. As a guy who toiled and played in the league,
yes.
I want to talk to you kind of about the state of the league right now.
Okay.
I mean, you're looking at the Hawks. They are a very young team, but there's lots of young teams in the league with emerging players trying to find their way. When you look at the way the game has changed mm-hmm. from the time that you played, what are some of the big changes that really jump out at you?
Well, there are two things that jump out at me. One, the number of three-point shots that are taken and the number...
You were born too late.
Yeah, that's right. And the guys that are taking them, you know, got seven-footers. Everybody has to take three-pointers. It seems like analytics has made that a rule. So you have much less lane play, much less physical play. And I think that part of the game has suffered. You get some great three-point shooters, obviously, and teams averaging 41 three-pointers a game.
Yeah.
So that part has changed a lot, too. And from a team perspective, I think you have far too many teams now that are rebuilding, and you wonder if they're trying to win or the guy's not playing. Or I think you just get confused at kind of what's going on a nightly basis all across the league. Coming up when we were playing, you were not aware if anybody was doing that. Everybody
right.
every night was trying to win every
right.
game.
Right.
You want to play every game and win every game, and now you're not sure. So I think maybe that's part of the incentive of the high draft pick and this and that. I don't know if that needs to be changed somewhere in the future, because if you didn't get a draft pick for losing, then it would not be incentive to lose. So
right.
maybe that can be adjusted somehow.
Mike, I want to come back to the three-point shot in a second
sure.
and something else you said too,
sure.
but I want to look at, you talk about the young teams.
Mm-hmm.
Have the young players in the league at times, I go back and forth on this, but have they been given too much too soon at times, Mike?
Absolutely. I think the fact that the game is not as physical, they want more movement, they make it more conducive for young players who can come in at 19 and play and be effective. And in the older times, it was much more physical. You need to be more mature. You need to be
right.
stronger, and you were challenged more aggressively. And so I think the league and the rules and the culture of the game has given them more up front. I think they're expected more and don't have to come in and just bust it really hard to earn respect the way you did before them.
Let's talk about the three-point shot, Mike, with
sure.
the advent of it, the way,
mm-hmm.
and all the other things you talk about with the less physical nature of the game and the three-point
right.
shooting. You were a guy that was I remember you as a terrific shooter in
Thank
the league,
you.
And
Thank
we
you.
Talk about the timing. Do you think that kind of play could have been blended in more into your time, because there were some terrific shooters? I mean,
sure.
I think of yourself. I think of guys
sure.
like Dell Curry. I think of
oh,
guys
yeah.
like Dale Ellis
who
were trending towards stretch four, a guy like a Dale Ellis.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that could have been integrated earlier, or is it just the analytics movement that's really kind of brought this on?
I think the analytics movement, and you had a few good teams that were taking advantage of that, and it's always been a kind of a copycat league, and somebody else wants to do it more and more and more now, and it's gotten to the point where sometimes it looks ridiculous. One guy just stands outside, holds
right.
the ball, and shoots a three, or in transition, guys come down and pull up for three.
That right, was, you don't go to the hoop anymore.
Don't go to the hoop. Don't
yeah.
cross underneath. Don't get any passes. We were mentioning that while I was playing, you had teams like the Denver Nuggets that ran a passing game. Indiana ran a passing game. Sometimes when I was at Milwaukee, Don Nelson would say, five passes before anybody shoots.
Right.
And that was such a strain defensively, especially in Denver with the altitude. But
yeah.
they're passing. It's going to end up with Kiki or Alex shooting. So I didn't really do that.
Yeah.
But they're going to make you work on that defensive end. Yeah, and they're not going to just come down and take a quick shot. You bet not. And the culture of passing, everybody touches the ball. The ball
right.
moves and shares. I think that was a more beautiful game. Now you got guys a lot of 25 and more scores, quick shooting, just come down, don't worry about anybody else, let it go.
Yeah.
It's kind of affected the whole culture of the game.
Well, and I guess with Mike Glenn, studio analyst for the Hawks and former NBA player, a guy who his nickname was the Stinger, folks, because he could sting jump shots and knock them down. I'm looking at the way the game has gone, Mike, and what you have said. You said 7-footers shooting the three.
Yes.
They always say three is better than two,
right?
But sometimes two is better than none. And and the lane play, the mid-range, that kind of stuff has disappeared. Do we have sometimes, I mean, I know a guy like you looks at it and says, why is that big guy taking that shot out there when he should be closer to the lane, or the ball should be moved for somebody else to take that shot?
Absolutely. I think the more participation you have, I like the lane play. Like, we were guarding Antetokounmpo at one point. He was like one of five or six from three, but he was 10 of 10 from two.
Right.
So give me them 10 for 10. Right. You know what I'm saying? And it affects the whole flow of the game as well. When you're just missing and coming down and taking wild looking shots, the beauty, the rhythm of the game is distorted to be, you know.
With Mike Glenn, studio analyst and former NBA player for the Atlanta Hawks, let's look out west. LeBron seems to be rejuvenated, and then you've got the Clippers with their two stars and Paul George and former Raptor Kawhi Leonard. Those are two of the obvious picks, but you talk about Denver. Is that a team that kind of plays it a little bit, you know, like a team, and again, maybe they're underplayed?
Yes. I tell you, with Denver even, the big guy Jokic is a tremendous player. I think they're playing him a little bit too far outside. He's shooting about 25% from three. Good passer, but he's more tempted to shoot those long threes. I think he could be much more effective coming in closer. He can still pass the ball to cutters and the weak side and all that thing and still score. He's big, he's strong, he's very crafty inside, but they are a good team. They the ball more. I like their style of play. I think you have to respect those Denver Nuggets and beware of them. Portland's a little different. They're a good team too, and I like to pick up off Carmelo for them. Another score. They generally try to outscore you out there, and they can do it with that backcourt, tremendous backcourt, and you get Carmelo in there too. You got a team to be reckoned with.
I want to throw a name at you, Mike. Again, we go back and we're kind of reflecting back. James Harden and what he's doing. A lot of people look at his offense as, I mean, it's, they say he's unguardable. I think some of that has to do with some of the rules and some of the tricks he has. But how do you think James Harden would have stacked up in your era, in a different era? And it's hard to compare across eras. We know that. But at the same time, his offense is great. But how much is he aided by the rules and the way the game has evolved now? If you were to put him back in the time when, you know, the Hawks were playing with you and the Steve Smiths and people like Mutombo and and people leaning on him, see if you could extrapolate back and take me back in that sense.
I think he's a legitimate star in any era. He would average 20 plus in any era. But I don't think a team would have allowed him just to hold a ball, monopolize the ball until he gets one. I mean, Red Holtzman would even holler at the great Walt Frazier, move the ball, move the ball. And everything was based on moving and sharing the ball. The great teams did it. So many teams. The Sacramento of a certain era, and then the Knicks before that. I mean, ball movement was a part of the game. Even big guys didn't like it if you didn't pass the ball. The big guys would be hollering, throw the ball in here sometime, man. It would be a disruptive force for your team. And I think he benefits. He has tremendous talent, and they allow him to do it, and he takes full advantage of it. He's good at getting to the free throw line. He has some awesome skills, obviously. But maybe the team would be better served with more movement, more people participating and using him as a go-to guy on certain situations rather than all throughout the game.
Last name before we close here, Mike, Luka Doncic. And I know he's a guy that's kind of connected with the Hawks franchise with the trade for Trae Young and Cam Reddish. But your thoughts on Luka Doncic?
Tremendous talent. I'm really glad he's here. I like the friendship slash rivalry that Trae Young and he have with each other. It reminds you a little bit of Bird and Magic. Very different, but they're pulling for each other and they want to outdo each other. And they were drafted almost 4 and 5, so right there together, and they're going to be compared forever. But I think it's good for both. And they kind of pull for each other, at the same time compete with each other. That same Bird Magic kind of thing, you know. I respect this guy, but I'm going to go beat him. So Anyway, it's good for the league. He's an excellent player, does many things well, and he's going to have a great future.
Mike, always great to visit and talk with you. Thanks for your time, man. We look forward to seeing you again soon.
Thank you, Paul. Anytime. It's my pleasure.
That was former NBA player, Atlanta Hawks broadcaster, Mike Glenn. All right, Jones, we just got about a minute left here, if that. Quickly, you had a chance to talk to Vince Carter when you were down in Atlanta. I chatted with him briefly, just more, you know, exchanging pleasantries, but you actually had a longer conversation with him for the TV broadcast. He's going to retire at the end of the year. I'm sure he's going into broadcasting. That said, he could pull a 180 and end up coaching as well. I mean, what do you think is the next step for Vince?
I think Vince is right now, he'll probably do the broadcasting thing.
Yeah.
I mean, the man's got a record. You know, he's not Nolan Ryan, 27 years in baseball, or Gordie Howe, 27 years in hockey, or, you know, but he has done a terrific job. His longevity stands for himself. And as much as some people in Toronto don't want to admit it, folks, he's going into the Hall of Fame.
Oh, he's definitely going to the Hall of Fame. 10 seconds, so I need a one-word answer. Will he retire as a Raptor, even if he signs a one-day contract?
Yes.
I agree. For our production crew, for everybody involved in the show, from Mike Glenn, Ed Cohen, and Ala Abdelnaby, for Paul Jones, I'm Eric Smith. This has been Hoops on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.